All right. So one of you reached out, wanted to know more about viatical settlements. Specifically, you wanted to know if they're actually considered securities. And let me tell you, it gets interesting. We're talking about, well, terminally ill people, and they're selling their life insurance policies to investors for like a lump sum. Then the investor, they take over the premiums and get the payout, when the original policyholder unfortunately passes away. Seems simple enough, right?
Yeah, it gets on the surface.
Well, that's where things get a bit complicated. The SEC kind of stepped in and said, maybe not so fast.
Right. Always a fun time when the SEC gets involved.
Right. And this brings us to a really interesting case, SEC v. Mutual Benefits Corp. This case actually went all the way up to the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, big deal. So to help us kind of unpack all of this, we've got our legal expert here. Welcome.
Thanks for having me. Always happy to dive into these fascinating cases.
Yeah, absolutely. So can you tell us, like, what was going on with this company, Mutual Benefits Corp, that caught the SEC's eye? Like, what were they doing?
Well, you see, Mutual Benefits Corp, we can call them MBC to make it a little
Yeah, well,
easier.
NBC it is.
They weren't just like buying and selling these policies, they were really heavily involved, like in evaluating the policies themselves. They were predicting life expectancy, even managing premiums after the investors, bought in. They really positioned themselves as like the experts, the ones who knew which policies were the, right ones, the ones that could actually turn a profit.
Oh, interesting. So investors were essentially relying on NBC's judgment and expertise. I mean, especially since they wouldn't actually have access to like the medical records or really anything else to, make their own informed decisions, right?
They were kind of taking MBC's word for it. And well, that's where the SEC started to see, some potential issues, some red flags. Yeah. They accused MBC of fraud. They were saying that MBC was, well, misrepresenting the life expectancy data, making the investment seem way more attractive than they actually were. Some people even said that MBC was running a, get this, a Ponzi scheme.
Whoa, hold on, a Ponzi scheme. That's serious stuff.
Yeah, not good. They were alleging issues with like the escrow accounts and everything.
Wow. So NBC is in hot water. But here's where it gets really interesting, especially for, the legal folks out there listening. NBC, they fought back. They said, "Hey, wait a minute. This whole operation, this isn't even subject to securities laws. Like these viatical settlements, they're not securities."
Yeah.
Which brings us, I guess, to the heart of SEC v. Mutual Benefits Corp.
Yeah.
Did these viatical settlements actually, meet the criteria to be considered securities under U.S. law?
Right. And to figure that out, they had to turn to, well, everyone's favorite, the Howey
The
test.
Howey test. Okay. Yeah, that's ringing a bell from law school, maybe a distant bell. Can you give us a refresher? What is this test all about? What does it do?
Absolutely. The Howey test is basically our legal framework for determining if something, anything really, is an investment contract. And if it is, then boom, it falls under all those security regulations.
Okay, so an investment contract equals a security. Got it.
Right. And the Howey test has three parts to it, or prongs, as we lawyers like to call them.
Three prongs. All right, lay it on me. What are they?
So the first one is the simplest, really, investment of money. With the MBC case, this one was super obvious. Investors, they were putting their cash into these viatical settlements, hoping to make a, well, a profit. Straightforward.
Makes sense. So what about prong number two? What's that all about?
Prong number two is common enterprise. Essentially, it just means everyone's returns, they're tied together in some way. And again, with NBC, this was pretty clear. Their entire business model was based on like pooling all these policies together. So everyone's success or failure, was kind of linked.
Okay, so two down, one to go. This last prong, this has got to be where the real debate is, right? This is what makes or breaks it.
You got it. Prong number three, it's usually the trickiest one. It's whether the profits come, well, solely from the efforts of others. And this is where the legal battle really got heated.
I'm guessing NBC tried to argue that, well, the investors' profits, they weren't solely dependent on NBC's work, right?
Exactly. They pointed to all the work they did before investors were even in the picture, evaluating those policies, making those life expectancy predictions, all of that. They even cited a previous case, SEC v. Life Partners. It had a similar focus on those, pre-purchase activities.
Oh, clever. So basically they're saying, look, we did all the hard work up front. The profits aren't solely from someone else's efforts later on. Did it work?
Well, the 11th Circuit didn't buy it. They said, nope, not so fast. They basically said that it's not simply about when those efforts happen, but whether those efforts are essential for the investors to actually see a profit. And with NBC, their ongoing activities like managing those premiums, keeping tabs on the policyholders' health, that was all crucial. The whole system wouldn't work without NBC's continued involvement.
So the 11th Circuit was saying, nice try, NBC, but you can't just, you know, slice and dice your actions to avoid those securities laws. It's about the big picture.
Exactly. They were looking at the reality of the situation, how these investments actually worked.
Okay, we've got a pretty good handle on the legal framework now. But I'm curious, what does this all mean for the average investor? Like, why should anyone listening really care about, you know, some court case about viatical settlements? Seems pretty niche.
That's a great question, and it's where things get really interesting. This ruling, it wasn't just about viatical settlements. It actually set a precedent that could impact all sorts of alternative investment.
Oh, really? Like what?
Well, think about things like crypto staking, even certain real estate deals. This case, it essentially expanded the SEC's reach into these newer, more innovative parts of finance.
Hold on. Are you saying the SEC could start regulating things like crypto staking because of this case about viatical settlements? That seems like a big jump.
It might seem that way, but the underlying principle, it's very similar. The question is, are investors depending on someone else's expertise and efforts to make money? If the answer is yes, well, that should raise some eyebrows. Whether it's a viatical settlement or some new crypto thing, that question always applies.
Okay. I'm starting to see the connection.
Yeah.
It's all about protecting those investors,
yes,
right?
Sir.
Making sure people aren't getting caught up in shady schemes disguised as something,
yep,
you know, legitimate.
Exactly. And the NBC case, it's a perfect example of what can happen when there's a lack of oversight. Investors, they can be left vulnerable. You know, they can face some pretty significant risks, especially when they don't have any real control over how their money is being managed.
Right, right. But couldn't this ruling also lead to, I don't know, a lot of uncertainty in the market? How are people supposed to know what is and isn't a security if the definition is so broad?
That's a valid concern. And the court, they acknowledge that it's tough to draw, you know, really clear lines. They're basically said that the focus should always be on what's really going on with an investment, not just its, you know, structure or how it's labeled.
Okay, so substance over form. Don't get caught up in the legal jargon. Look at how the investment actually works in the real world.
Right.
That makes sense. Before we go too far down the rabbit hole, let's bring it back to, you know, our legal eagles listening.
Mm-hmm.
What are the key takeaways from this case that lawyers and law students should really remember?
I'd say there are three big things. First, there are no hard and fast rules when it comes to the Howey test. Both the things that happen before and after someone buys in, they can be really important in determining if something is a security.
Okay, so it's not just about when someone puts in the work, but if that work is really driving those potential profits?
Exactly. Second, pay attention to how much investors are relying on someone else. If your client's returns depend heavily on someone else's, you know, skills or special knowledge, like those life expectancy predictions with NBC, that's a red flag.
It might actually be a security masquerading as something else.
You got it. And finally, this ruling, it gives the SEC a lot more power to keep an eye on these new and innovative, you know, investment tools, especially in those fast-growing areas like fintech and, yes, even those viatical settlements we've been talking about.
Right. It's a brave new world out there. Lots to keep track of. But that's what we're here for, right? Helping everyone make sense of these complex topics.
Absolutely. And I think we've covered a lot of ground just in this first part of our deep dive into SEC v. Mutual Benefits Corp.
Yeah, definitely a lot to unpack.
But we're not done yet. We'll be back soon with part two, and we'll get even deeper into the details of this fascinating case. Stay tuned.
Welcome back. So we're picking up our conversation about viatical settlements and that big case, SEC v. Mutual Benefits Corp. Yeah, we were just talking about how the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals basically said, hey, these viatical settlements, yeah, those can be considered securities. Pretty big win for the SEC and, you know, a bit of a wake-up call for investors who are looking into these alternative investments.
Right.
But, you know, this wasn't just some theoretical legal debate, right? There were actual people, real people involved in this.
Oh, yeah.
Thousands of investors put their money into these viatical settlements through NBC. So what happened to them after the SEC, you know, stepped in?
Well, it wasn't a happy ending for a lot of them. Remember, the SEC was accusing NBC of basically running a Ponzi scheme. That meant the money they were using to pay those early investors, it was coming from new investors, not from actual, you know, returns on the policies themselves.
Like that old saying, you know, it's all fun and games until the music stops. Someone's always left holding the bag when that new money dries up.
Exactly. And when the SEC stepped in, froze NBC's assets, the whole thing, it just crumbled. Investors, they were stuck. A lot of them lost a lot of money.
Man, that's got to be tough. Especially because, you know, a lot of these people, they were probably drawn to viatical settlements because of the potential for, you know, big returns. They probably thought they were being smart, you know, not walking into a financial disaster.
That's the thing, right? That's why this case is such a good reminder that, you know, you always got to understand the risks with any investment, especially when they dangle those sky-high returns in front of you. If something sounds too good to be true, it probably is.
For sure. Words to live by. So what happened to NBC after all this? Did they face any consequences for what happened?
Oh, yeah, big time. The SEC investigation, it led to criminal charges. Several of the top executives, even the founder, they were accused of, well, all kinds of financial crimes, fraud, money laundering. They even threw in racketeering.
Racketeering. Whoa, okay, that's some serious stuff.
No kidding. The prosecutors, they basically said, look, this wasn't just, you know, some white-collar crime. This was a full-on criminal operation.
Wow. So what happened? What was the end result for NBC and the people in charge?
Well, after a long, long legal battle, some of the, the key players, they ended up convicted. Prison time. And NBC itself, they filed for bankruptcy. Left a lot of investors, well, disappointed and broke.
Man, that's rough.
Yeah.
It's a good reminder that even in that world of high finance, things can go south real fast, especially when greed and deception are in the mix.
Definitely. The NBC case, it's a cautionary tale for investors and regulators, you know, shows how important due diligence is, transparency, ethical conduct, all of that.
For sure. But the impact of this case, it wasn't limited to just NBC, right? Mm-hmm. It had kind of a ripple effect across the whole viatical settlement industry.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. When the SEC went after NBC, it sent shockwaves through the whole sector. Suddenly, regulators were paying attention, scrutinizing, you know, and investors, they started being a lot more careful.
So you could say that the NBC case, it brought more scrutiny to the market and hopefully led to better, stronger protections for investors.
Yeah, I think that's fair. It was a wake-up call for everyone involved.
And this brings us back to those wider implications we were talking about earlier. The court's decision that viatical settlements are securities, it could have ramifications for other alternative investments too, right?
Right. Because those basic principles and the Howey test, you can apply those to a lot of different financial products. It's not just viatical settlements. It's, you know, any situation where the investors are basically relying on someone else's work, someone else's efforts to make a profit.
Gotcha. So can you give us some examples of other alternative investments that might be looked at differently now because of the SEC v. Mutual Benefits Court Act case?
One area that comes to mind right away is cryptocurrency, specifically crypto staking.
Yeah.
You know, when investors lock up their digital assets to earn rewards or interest.
Interesting. How does the logic of the NBC case apply to something like that?
Well, think about it. In both cases, you have investors putting up money, they're expecting to make a profit, and those profits, they mostly come from someone else's work, someone else's efforts. With crypto staking, those efforts might be, you know, managing the tech stuff, validating transactions, participating in governance. You know, it's not the investor directly making the returns, they're relying on someone else, a third party.
I see what you mean. Whether it's picking those profitable viatical settlements or successfully navigating the world of crypto staking, the investor is relying on someone else's knowledge, someone else's expertise.
Exactly. And that's really the core of the Howey test, right? Figuring out if those profits, if they're mainly coming from the efforts of others, and if they are, it doesn't really matter if it's a viatical settlement or a crypto staking platform or something else entirely. It could very well be a security.
So SEC v. Mutual Benefits Corp, it basically broadened what could be considered a security. And that's a big deal for all these new innovative investment products.
Yeah, exactly. And this is where things get really interesting. We're seeing so many new innovative financial instruments popping up, especially in the digital asset space.
It's a fast-moving world, finance. The law is always trying to keep up.
It is. And SEC v. Mutual Benefits Corp, it's a great example of, you know, how the courts are dealing with these new challenges. They're taking those longstanding legal ideas and trying to apply them to a world that's changing really fast.
Fascinating, but also kind of daunting, I bet, for investors and the people, you know, creating these new financial products and the people trying to regulate it all.
Oh, for sure. Keeps things interesting. That's what makes this area of law so dynamic. Always something new to learn, to analyze.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think we've covered a ton of ground in the second part of our deep dive. We looked at what happened after that MBC case, the implications for investors, and the bigger impact on the whole financial industry.
Yeah, we really saw how a case that, you know, seemed to be about a niche product, viatical settlements, how it can actually have these big ripple effects across the whole financial world. It's shaping how we think about investment contracts, investor protection now in this modern era.
It really shows that you never know where a deep dive will take you. But we've still got more to explore, right? We'll be back soon with part three of our look into SEC v. Mutual Benefits Corp. Welcome back to the final part of our deep dive into SEC v. Mutual Benefits Corp. We've covered a lot, you know, from the ins and outs of these viatical settlements to the SEC's case against MBC, and even how this ruling could impact those alternative investments, like out there in the wild.
Yeah, it's been quite a journey.
It has. But like with any, you know, big legal decision, there were some pushbacks, some people who weren't exactly thrilled with the 11th Circuit's decision to, you know, kind of broaden the definition of what an investment contract really is. So what were some of the main concerns people had about this ruling?
Well, one of the biggest ones was that this wider view of the Howey test, it could create a lot of uncertainty in the market. Some folks were saying it would stifle innovation, make it harder for new legitimate businesses to get the funding they need to grow.
So they were worried that the pendulum was swinging too far toward regulation, mm-hmm. and that it could end up, you know, hurting entrepreneurial ventures, hurting economic growth.
Exactly. It's always about finding that balance, right, between protecting investors and making sure the markets can actually function properly.
And some people felt like the MBC case, it tipped the scales a bit too far in favor of, you know, stricter regulation.
Yeah, that was definitely the view of some legal experts and industry groups. They were arguing that the court's decision could have some unintended consequences, like, you know, catching legitimate businesses in this web of regulations that weren't really designed for them.
Okay, so what were they actually saying? What were their concerns about, you know, what could happen after this ruling?
Well, for one, they argued that the court's focus on the economic reality, you know, over those formal legal structures, they said that could lead down a slippery slope, give the regulators too much power to decide what is and isn't a security, which could lead to, you know, inconsistent enforcement, things like that.
So basically, a lack of clear guidelines could make it really tough for businesses to know where they stand, and that could discourage innovation.
Right. And remember, the Howey test, it was originally made to deal with those traditional securities like stocks and bonds. So trying to apply that to more complex, nuanced things like viatical settlements or crypto staking, well, it gets tricky.
Like using a hammer to fix a computer. The old tools don't always work with the new stuff.
Exactly. And that's why some experts, they were calling for, you know, more guidance from the regulators, maybe even new laws that were specifically made to deal with the unique challenges of these alternative investment markets.
So they weren't necessarily against regulation. They just wanted something more tailored to these new types of investments, these new markets.
Right. Something more specific.
Which makes sense.
Yeah.
A one-size-fits-all approach doesn't always work.
Agreed. But then on the other hand, you had people who are, you know, really happy with the 11th Circuit's decision. They were saying it was a huge win for investors, you know, a way to protect them from fraud and abuse.
They were probably looking at the MBC case and thinking, this is why we need stricter rules.
Exactly. They felt like the SEC needed the authority to go after the bad guys, especially in these new markets where things move so fast. They saw this ruling as a, you know, a victory for investor protection.
So it was a classic battle, right?
Yeah.
Those who want more flexibility in the market versus those who want stricter rules and more investor protection.
Yeah, and that tension, that push and pull, it's always there when it comes to financial regulation. It's about finding that sweet spot, right?
Yeah.
Encouraging innovation while also keeping investors safe.
And the MBC case, it really showed how tricky that can be, especially with these new complex financial products that are always evolving.
It definitely did. But even with all the debate, SEC v. Mutual Benefits Corp., it's a landmark case. Anyone interested in securities law, alternative investments, or, you know, just the future of financial regulation, it's a must read.
It's a case that people are still talking about, still debating, which really says something about its impact. It reminds us that the law, it's not static, it's always changing, adapting to the challenges of a world that's constantly evolving.
And with all these new financial products and services popping up, you know, we can definitely expect to see more legal battles like this one. Courts and regulators, they're going to have to figure out how to apply these existing frameworks to these new situations, these new innovations.
Exciting times, right? Challenging, but exciting. And it's definitely something we'll be keeping an eye on here at The Deep Dive. So make sure you join us for future episodes. We'll be exploring this ever-changing world of finance and all the legal battles happening within it.
We'll be here to break it all down for you, making the complex clear and the obscure fascinating.
Until next time, stay informed, stay curious.